Hey, Whiskey Ringers, it is episode 8.2 or episode 9. I haven't really decided yet. Thank you so much for listening, and please share with your friends, family, and fellow whiskey lovers. So this is part 2 of a special 2-part episode with Dan McKee and Andrea Wilson of Michter's Distillery, and I promise this intro won't be anywhere near as long as the last episode. So just for a quick rundown, if you're listening, hopefully, number one, you've listened to the first episode of this, otherwise the second half may not make much sense. But hopefully you're also following on social media. And if you're following on social media, I hope you've entered the grand giveaway going on, which is a full set of Michter's copper barware plus 2 Michter's branded Glencairns. And if you haven't yet, seriously, what are you waiting for? Visit me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to enter and for giveaway rules and details. In the middle of the last episode, I gave you a code for an additional 100 entries. And yes, you will have listened to the first episode to get that code. This time, I'm going to give you another code. This one is all about the merch. It's all about just supporting the site, the podcast, anything you can do. So any purchase you make from the Whiskey Ring shop on whiskeyinmyweddingring.com will get you 100 entries per $10 spent. Plus, through the end of July, you can use code Michter's for 25% off any order over $25. That's 25% off any order over $25 using code Michter's through the end of July. And as just a little extra, your entries are going to be based on the original price, not the discount. So don't worry about losing entries if you go over that amount. Before we get going, again, I want to shout out Mike Fry and thebourbonculture.com. Remember, that's the bourbon culture, not just bourbon culture. Really do check out his episode. His article on Michter's and Michter's history. It's really fascinating. It provides some great additional detail that isn't in this episode, but it's just good to know about Michter's, and also poses some interesting questions that I think will be a good upcoming episode or a return episode next year. If you haven't yet, please do follow Whiskey in My Wedding Ring and the Whiskey Ring podcast on Instagram. Just follow Whiskey in My Wedding Ring on Facebook and follow at Whiskey Ring on Twitter. You can subscribe to the newsletter at the website, and please do so we can keep more content coming to you. If you like what you hear, please consider supporting the site and the podcast for as little as $2.50 a month at patreon.com/whiskeyinmyweddingring. I want to thank you also to our sponsors, Mash and Grape and Cairncraft, both of whom you'll hear in the episode, for additional discount codes through them. You can subscribe to the Whiskey Ring podcast on your favorite podcast platform today. We're now on Podbean, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and most other major podcast platforms. Every subscription and listen and download helps us get sponsors, more guests, and ultimately get more content to you. So thanks for listening and supporting. Please enjoy part 2 of my conversation with Dan McKee and Andrea Wilson, Master Distiller and Master of Maturation, respectively, of Michter's Distillery. We were just talking with Andrew Wilson and Dan McKee of Michter's, and we were just talking about the toasting aspect having to do with the barrels and specifically with Shank's Sour Mash, and then we're going to go into Bomberger's in just a minute. With the toasting aspect, so toasting the barrels, as we mentioned earlier, it's not unique to Michter's, but it's also not necessarily common. You know, not everyone is doing it. And the place that I've seen toasted barrels much more so is really in the wine industry. And I'm curious if there was, you know, with the thinking about the intention of toasting the barrels for Michter's, if there was consideration of influence from the wine industry, if that was where it came from, or if there was a different impetus for including that in the process.
I think that the wine industry has been incredibly, you know, toasting, the art of toasting has been around a long time because of the wine industry. So I think leveraging that into, you know, whiskey is something really beautiful, and taking advantage of that opportunity and unlocking the potential of the wood is a really powerful thing. You know, you can get spicy clove, you know, toasty characteristics, chocolates, fruits, you know, all kinds of beautiful characteristics. And then the char You know, most people think, oh, it's just sort of an internal filter in the barrel. Yes, you know, it does play that role, but the char level does influence, you know, lighter chars will allow more of the esters and, you know, the fruity or spicy characteristics to shine through, whereas darker chars will sort of, you know, push you more towards darker and smoky characteristics. So, you know, part of the balance is getting the right toast profile with the right char level. So, you know, you can't just say, oh, I'm going to add a toast and keep the same char level. You've got to really have that balance because you're really trying to create a beautifully balanced spirit. So you've got to think about both sides of that equation. But certainly, you know, the wine industry has been doing beautiful things. Now, in some cases, what they're trying to do is sort of balance the barrel. You know, they're trying to create a toast that doesn't accentuate any one character too much. You know, so they're trying to create sort of a roundness that they can then impart an influence to their wine. So whereas, you know, we may be wanting to accentuate or push or drive certain characteristics out of the wood, you know, sometimes in wine, they're just trying to create a balanced barrel that they can, you know, then influence the wine with some beautiful characters.
Does toasting the barrel limit the level of char you can go to?
Well, certainly, you know, because some toasts are done at lower temperatures, you know, when you ignite the interior of the barrel and the deeper the char level you go, you could literally burn up the compounds that you just worked so hard to toast the barrel to get the barrel to release. So, you know, it's sort of a curve over time. So as you go up in temperature and the longer, you know, you're breaking down different compounds, but then you can also destroy those compounds, you know, the longer that you toast. And if you're toasting and then you're overlaying char, then you can also burn up those things because you've essentially ignited the interior of the wood. So.
Gotcha. Good. All right. Why don't we then move on to number four, which is the Bomberger's Declaration.
Yep. All right. So as I mentioned earlier, you know, again, this is part of our legacy series, paying homage to Bomberger's in the 1800s and when the distillery was in Schaeferstown, Pennsylvania. Yes, this is a beautiful Kentucky straight bourbon. Again, Andrea, you know, chose to use the, you know, the chinkapin wood with this. So we've got bourbon aging in our, you know, charred oak barrels and then some chinkapin oak. And actually, you know, for these, the wood was naturally air dried for over 3 years. So that offers a, you know, a uniqueness to it. And again, you know, whether it's the spicy, fruity, you know, chocolate overtones and so forth imparted to the bourbon, this is 108 proof. To me, it does not drink like 108 proof. It's so smooth, but it's very rich, flavorful. Again, outside of that Michter's House style, beautiful color. You know, there's kind of a, you know, kind of a mahogany brown color to the color to this whiskey. This is a fun one because, you know, again, the Shanks, the Bombergers, they're very limited releases. There's just not a lot of them. But when you get the opportunity to kind of even do a vertical, if you, you know, whether it's from 18, 19, 20, it's a lot of fun just to see the progression, see the innovation and, you know, and then experience how we're having fun, you know, creating these expressions.
Definitely. And I'm noticing right up front, you notice a little bit more proof. It's by no means, you know, going to blow your face off type proof. It's much more just a firm, spicy hand, if you will. But I'm also getting a lot of candied notes. Yeah. Do it.
buttery, caramel.
Yeah, very confectionery. So when I was thinking about this with the Shanks as well, when you're creating or thinking about a barrel with the Chinkapin oak, is the entire barrel made Chinkapin? Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if, you know, it would be like alternating staves or if it would be all 100, but.
Nope, we go all in. Go on. Might as,
in for a penny, in for a pound. Might as well. Might as well. Yeah. I really do enjoy these. And so unlike the Shanks, which is it's a sour mash American whiskey. So, not revealing mash bills, of course, but I would assume then that it's a plurality mash bill as opposed to one grain being over 51% to call it a bourbon or a rye. That's just conjecture. I'm just saying that. But with the Bombergers, it's specifically a Kentucky straight bourbon. So, as you said, Dennis, outside of the Michter's House style, which you described as more of the rye was more of a Kentucky rye, but with the bourbon, I'm curious again, without asking for mash bill, what the different thought process is in creating in creating this bourbon as opposed to the US 1 bourbon.
Well, I mean, you know, look, we use in the bourbon, you know, again, the corn, the rye, you know, the malted barley, again, you're getting sweetness. So obviously there's some, you know, a fair amount of corn in the mash bills. But again, with this bourbon, you know, just to go back to the Chinkapin oak, that's a big part of this. Just it's, you know, again, you get that sweetness, but now the flavors imparted from the Chinkapin really take it to a different direction than our US 1 bourbon per se. Again, I say outside this house style, but again, there's still that ultimate smoothness. Cause I mean, did you feel as a 108 that, I mean, I could drink this all day long. I mean,
absolutely. And I'm an admitted proof hound. So,
sure. As it comes across the palate, it's not like heat. It finishes very well. It stays with you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, so that's some of the thing, again, as we say out of that house style, there are characteristics we still want to adhere to. But yeah, you know, again, the uniqueness of this is that Chinkapin oak and the flavor extraction we're getting from that barrel, but also the art of, you know, of the whiskeys, the bourbons together and creating this unique experience.
Very nice. Very nice. So, we were this one with the Bombergers. We also wanted to talk about another topic, not unique to Michter's, but again, less common in the industry, which is the heat cycling.
Mm-hmm. So what we're really trying to do in heat cycling, so just so people understand, you know, this is Kentucky where we're aging, and Kentucky is a great climate. You know, we have really dry, cold winters, and we have really hot, humid summers. And you know, along the way, we have spring and fall, so we have dramatic temperature changes. It's nothing for us to have, you know, 30, 40 degree temperature swings, you know, in the course of a day. And, you know, it's great for aging whiskey. And because what's happening is when the temperature is increasing inside the barrel, whiskey is a volatile substance, so the pressure gets tighter because the whiskey is heating up and the vapor pressure is getting tighter. So ultimately, it will push down on the liquid and it will push the whiskey into the capillaries of the wood. Then, as the temperature cools down and the pressure releases inside the barrel, the whiskey flows back out of the capillaries of the wood, back to the center of the cask. And that's what we call the interaction with the wood, that movement in and out of the capillaries of the wood. That's what's going to drive the richness of, you know, flavor, color, aroma, all of that because of that interaction. Now, what we try to do during the winter months is we're going to heat up our warehouses to a certain temperature set point, a liquid temperature set point. We're going to hold there for a period of time, and then we're going to naturally cool down. And that process increases the interaction with the wood during the winter months. And that is also another layer of, you know, Michter's, you know, in terms of our philosophies. You know, we've talked about small batch and single barrel. We've talked about natural air drying and seasoning the wood. We've talked about the low entry proof of 103. We've talked about, you know, toasting and charring barrels. And now, you know, we're talking about heat cycling. And that is also, you know, something that, you know, it's not inexpensive to do it. It is something that, you know, we believe in terms of, you know, how it really creates this beautiful whiskey. I've actually got some samples here. And again, I know the people on the podcast can't see this, but I will try to share this with you. So the very light one is at 1 month old. That's a sample taken from the barrel at 1 month. You'll see what it looks like at 3 months, at 6 months, 1 year, 2 year, and then at 6 years old. And you can see how that color really gets deep and dark and rich. Color is only one variable, quality variable that we're looking at. But it is a variable that, you know, with the interaction with the wood, continues to evolve and change. And so, you know, when you think about all of these things that we're doing, it's a compounded effect that ultimately gets us to this beautiful, you know, final product.
And so just to, for my own clarification, with heat cycling, mm-hmm. it's the temperature. You're not moving cycling barrels like I know they do at like Maker's Mark, for example.
No, we do not move barrels. And it's an interesting point that you bring up because the warehouse environment, you know, traditional warehouses here in Kentucky, you know, you see sometimes 7-floor warehouses is very common. We have settled in on 4-floor warehouses. Our new campus in Springfield, we have some new warehouses we've built there. We have some other warehouses that we lease off-site. They're all 4 floors. And the reason why we've settled in on 4-floor warehouses is because we can control the continuity of the entire house. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing as much single barrel as we are, we don't want, you know, oh, a barrel came from the 7th floor, you know, it's really something. And then the barrel that came from the 1st floor, maybe it's not so something,
right.
You know, so you don't want these dramatic deviations from the top floors to the bottom floors or these honey holes, as they call them. We want to have continuity of our entire house. Our batches are so small and we do so much single barrel product, we can't afford to have all of that dramatic deviation and have our customers going, well, wow, my bottle of Michter's doesn't taste like it did last time, you know. We want little subtle nuances of flavor difference, but we don't want dramatic deviation, so.
Gotcha. That's fascinating with the 4 floors. And the, are you set up as more of a traditional rickhouse style within those 4 floors, or is it Dunnage style, mm-hmm. or? Traditional rickhouse.
No, yeah, it's a traditional rickhouse, but our new warehouses are concrete and they have steel racks. So we believe in steel racking. Even in our distillery here in Shively, we have steel rack warehouses. That's very important to us for employee safety, longevity, you know, just the way we manage things. You know, we subscribe to the traditional nature of how we make bourbon, but we have tried to make things, you know, better than they were previously.
Sure. I can't think anyone would argue with that. All right. I think that covers it for the Bombergers, which means we are moving into probably the part that I'm most excited about. I I really like the bourbon. I really like the Shanks and the Baumburgers, but the Michter's Rye for me is the barrel strength rye are my go-to. So with that, so we're going to talk about two types of the barrel strength rye. First, the regular, if you will, barrel strength rye. And then we'll go on to talk about the toasted barrel strength rye as well. So first off, going on to the barrel strength rye. And this is going to be the green label, with the tan outline. And there you go, Dan is showing it there for those viewers watching. And the red lettering for limited release, the established date, and US 1. The difference here being the toasted barrel does not use the red lettering. It uses the cream to eggshell lettering throughout. So quick way to tell by the eye which one you're going for, although honestly, in my mind, you can't go wrong with either one.
Right. I agree. No, our Michter's US 1 barrel strength Kentucky straight rye whiskey. This is, if you have the opportunity to, kind of go from our Michter's US 1 single barrel Kentucky straight rye at the lower proof of 84.8, and then now try it at barrel strength. So this is that, same US 1 bourbon or rye. It's, typically aged between 5 and 7 years. Again, we're not releasing until we feel it meets the taste profile. But, the uniqueness at barrel strength, I meet a lot of people that enjoy a higher proof rye. Now, I'll say the intensity in a way is more from our US 1 rye at the lower proof. Again, to get to that lower proof, we're adjusting it with the addition of water. Here, we don't have that. So this would have gone through the same processes along with our skillful chilled filtration. And then it offers up that beautifulness. It has a great mouthfeel. You mentioned, I believe your bottle is around 114.
So this one, the barrel strength, this one's at 108.6.
Okay, 108.
Right.
Okay.
My toasted barrel is at 114.
The toasted was 114. Okay, so at 108. So you can still see we're right in that range we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. But now, the beautifulness, you get the butterscotches, there's still that cinnamon there. You get a little bit of that citrus, cherry, caramel. And again, being that Kentucky style rye, there's that, nice addition of corn to provide that sweetness. So even at barrel strength, it's very approachable, very smooth. And again, on the bartending side, making beautiful cocktails that it plays very well with other ingredients.
I have to say, I like making cocktails with barrel strength rye and bourbons. But I mean, again, I'm a proof hound. So for me, an 80 proofer might just get lost, honestly. But that is excellent.
There's a nice little bit of, oak there towards the finish for me. And
absolutely.
It reminds me of, and I always say this because I will never come off of it. It reminds me when I was a little girl, my grandmother used to make rum raisin ice cream. And, because I do think it's got this vanilla spice to it, and that coupled with this raisin quality, and it reminds me of her rum raisin ice cream, and I just adore it. It's beautiful.
I can totally see that. I was thinking like a vanilla saltwater taffy in a way, that very creamy confectionery and sugary to an extent. It's definitely on the sweeter side of the rye spectrum, but it's not, you're not drinking a rye liqueur. It's very much still saying, nope, I've got some cinnamon spice. I've got some whole cloves in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really love this one. And it's an interesting pairing too, with just putting it side by side with the Bombergers, of course, it's completely different spirits. There's so many differences between them that a straight one-to-one comparison is not apt. But taking away the flavors and just going by proof, you know, this particular barrel of the rye is 108 and change. The Bombergers was right at 102. So we're talking fractions of a proof point apart. And they do drink very differently. Uh-huh. And of course, like I said, that could be, you know, dozens of different factors into that. But just looking at what a 108 proof at this product versus a 108 proof in another product can look like, the difference is fascinating to do a side by side with. The Whiskey Ring podcast is now brought to you by Mash and Grape. I'm a huge fan of Mash and Grape. They ship to most states nationwide. They have great private selections and a great membership program called the Dark Spirit Society, of which I'm a member, that gets you even more private selections, plus free shipping on orders over $95 anywhere that they ship. For Whiskey and My Wedding Ring fans and Whiskey Ring podcast listeners, Mash and Grape is offering 20% off your first month of any Mashbox subscription, prepaid or ongoing. Just use code WhiskeyRing at checkout. That's mashandgrape.com. Search Mashbox Club and use code WhiskeyRing at checkout for 20% off your first month of any Mashbox subscription. The Whiskey Ring podcast is also brought to you by Cairn Craft. I use Cairn Craft's Cairn Caddy bamboo glassware carrier, the Cairn Caps bamboo lids, and Cairn Cradle glassware hanging racks every single day. And definitely when I'm tasting new things and have a lot of things to get through. Nobody else is making carriers for your Glencairns like Cairn Craft is. Plus, they've got infinity decanters, glass lids, Glencairn brushes, and more. Whiskey Ring podcast listeners can get 10% off their purchase with code WhiskeyRing10 at checkout. Just go to cairncraft.com, pick any of those incredible products that I use on a daily basis, and use code WhiskeyRing10 at checkout for 10% off your purchase. Now, back to the episode.
Yeah, and the rise, especially like the barrel strength here, it's a lot of fun. Andrea's great at this, but like the food pairings with aged hams and smoked salmons, and you know, and then of course if you want, you know, we use like with the unblended American or the bourbons with chocolates and of course the cheeses, but the rise will cut through the fat of the meat, and it's a lot of fun. So it's a lot of fun to use the higher proof to do that. And it's,
I particularly enjoy the barrel strength. I think it's really beautiful with smoked salmon. I think it's out of this world delicious with smoked salmon.
I mean, I'm a New York Jew. You're not going to find me turning down some smoked salmon once in a while. it's just who I am, but,
all right, give it a go. Yeah, let us know. Let's do it.
It's funny you mentioned it because the food pairing in particular, I was just talking about a week or two ago with Mark Vartson. He works at Highland Park over in Scotland. And of course, again, complete different spirit, you know, bringing in peat and all that. But he was saying that he's starting to do more food pairings at his tastings. And one that he did in East Asia was chicken fried rice with a Highland Park 12. You know, it's 86 proof spirit, peated, but not in a medicinal way, very heathery peat. And yet it worked really well with the umami and salty and meaty flavor of a chicken fried rice. And I think that's
something, you know, Dan and I talk about this all the time. Like there is a whole, you know, just to be clear, there are people who, you know, really geek out on this, and they'll take, okay, what is the chemistry of the spirit? What is the chemistry of the food? Find the common compounds, and you can, you know, compare and contrast, and, you know, you can do all these very complicated food pairings, right? We find the best way is to just try it. You know, like it's really fun. I know we've all been under COVID lockdown, but you know, when you get back to enjoying time with friends and family, it's really fun just to pick some different dishes, sip out some different whiskeys, have people try them with different things, talk about like what paired well with what. and what do you like better? And, you know, you can do that with, you know, people always think sweet, 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 you know, pastries and chocolates and, you know, caramels and things like that. But it doesn't have to be that. You can do that with lamb. You can do it with smoked salmons. You can do it with, like you said, chickens and you know, beautiful cuts of steak and beef and just all kinds of stuff. But you can do it with cheeses. You can do it with snack foods, you know, and just decide what do you think your favorite snack food is with your favorite, you know, Michter's product, you know, and it's really, really fun and engaging. And Dan always has this great story about how he poured American whiskey over, you know, ice cream one time that he was doing an event. And the lady asked him and said, here, just pour it on my ice cream. And then suddenly was a thing that night. You know, people wanted it on their ice cream. And so it's just fun to experience because people have been conditioned to think wine and food. But it actually is really beautiful to do things with whiskey, and you can, you know, complement, you can contrast, but you can also create sort of this flavor explosion when you have something that comes together and takes it to a whole nother level. So it's really fun to do.
Well, now I know what I'm doing tonight with when I have my ice cream. Keeping some aside here, I'm going to pour right on top.
Mix a little bit of chocolate syrup in there too.
Killing me. I love it. I love it. So I did want to follow up. So Dan, you mentioned this before, and I know wanted to talk about it. You mentioned that that Michter's uses custom chill filtration on this. So feel free to go into, you know, is it on all the whiskeys, some of them, and what that means by custom chill filtration.
Sure. So yeah, that's something, again, you know, Andrea mentioned our six key philosophies, and that skillful chilled filtration is one of those. You know, if you think about just kind of the bourbon, the rye, and again, all of our whiskeys go through this skillful chilled filtration, but like the bourbons, the ryes, they're in that new toasted, charred American white oak barrel. The complexities, the, you know, that first time use of that barrel, there's so much flavor extraction with the low resulting from that low barrel entry proof, the Kentucky, you know, climate, and then the additional heat cycling and so forth. So there's so much complexity that, you know, to us, you have so many different molecules and compounds in the whiskey that you have those large chain and small chain molecules, and you can, you know, the large chain can be dominant. You have the smaller ones, and we want to find that nice balance. So people think that just with the chilled filtration that, you know, one of the reasons you may do it is to prevent the whiskeys from forming that chilled haze when, you know, those fatty acids and the alcohols, those, you know, the esters, they'll drop out and they'll form that haze, that chilled haze. So that's one reason people do it. But also our protocols are different for each whiskey. So along with that chilled filtration, we're using different filtering media for each whiskey to provide a unique experience. Okay. So each whiskey is different. It has different qualities, and that's our job. It's our job to bring that whiskey and make it its best that we feel fits that Michter's House style. I personally don't buy into the argument whether, you know, you should chill filter, non-chill filter, so forth. Because usually all companies are doing some sort of filtration, whether it's a, you know, a carbon filtration, one size fits all approach. We do not do a carbon filtration on our products. It's always the, you know, again, that skillful chilled filtration. But again, it's to make the most beautiful whiskey that fits that Michter's House style. So we're very proud of it. You know, Willie Pratt, our first master distiller, he did with the team and Andrea and so forth, did a lot of extensive testing to develop these protocols per whiskey. So the filtering media that we may use for our US 1 small batch bourbon, we don't use for, let's say, our single barrel, you know, ryes, because it makes a different expression, and you can see that it's really neat, and the different filtrations make for, just in color alone, you can change it from that nice, beautiful, you know, darker colored whiskey to a much lighter one. You can change the aromatics. You know, when you change the, you know, the time that you do the filtration, the pressure, the temperature, it all affects different things. Again, the aromas, the mouthfeel, the texture, so forth, everything's impacted. As Andrea said several times, you change one thing in the process, you're changing those qualities about the whiskey, and that, whether it's the milling of the grain throughout the aging process to even the skillful chilled filtration, you change one of those components, you have potentially a different whiskey. And so that's something we're very proud of. It allows us to take those finest qualities. Again, you have those large chain, the small chain, you're letting some of those lighter aromatics really shine through and not be dominated by some of those heavier compounds. And that's what we find beautiful about our whiskeys.
I think Dan brings up an important point, is that, you know, you know, there's some people that believe when you filter a whiskey, you can impact color, flavor, and mouthfeel. And we would agree with that. You know, we would absolutely agree with that. But it also is that if we're going to do all of these things to create this beautifully rich barrel that's going to impart all these things, we want to accentuate that whiskey's best characteristics. And every whiskey is different. Every whiskey we make is different. And so why wouldn't you create a custom process that's really going to accentuate each individual whiskey's best qualities? Because what we're trying to do is we're trying to, you know, create a dynamic experience, both front, middle, and back of palate. You know, so we're thinking about all of those things and navigating this, not just trying to have one, you know, experience, and that's what the person remembers because the dominant characteristics came forward. And, you know, I always tell people, my analogy for this is that if you had 10 people in a room and everybody's talking really loud, one of those 10 people has a really soft voice. Nobody can hear what that person's saying, but what they have to say might be really important. So you have to kind of adjust the noise level in the room to be able to hear what that person has to say. Might be a dumb analogy, but it kind of gives you the essence of what we're trying to achieve with these whiskeys. And I think that, you know, it is something really special. It takes a lot of time and energy. Just because we did something last year doesn't mean that it can be the exact same way this year. You know, as whiskeys age, as things change, as, you know, we select casks based on quality. So, you know, when it's ready, and we might have to, you know, make a slight adjustment because something's different. So it really is a complicated process, but it's something that we're incredibly proud of. And, you know, it's the final philosophy in our six that make Michter's Michter's.
And again, I can't argue with that. I'll admit, I usually fall on the side of, you know, favoring non-chill filtration over chill filtration of any kind. I know I just bungled the pronunciation of that. Try that again later. It does go to the heart of what I see Michter's as, from both a consumer standpoint, from a blogosphere standpoint. And that's really, every step along the way, as you say, is important. And every step is furthermore purposeful. Everything you do has a purpose. And as much as I would love everything to be non-chill filtered and you know, whatever that might mean for a bottle, a barrel, a batch of whiskey, I absolutely agree with you. I can completely see where you're saying, look, we've done all of these steps along the process to make this whiskey. And I think that coming in at the very end and allowing too much of a variable at the end, it doesn't really fit. It fits better with that philosophy of everything has a purpose. And when you're doing, as you say, you know, it's not every barrel is treated the same, not every batch is treated the same way. So there isn't this blanket process. It again speaks to purpose. And I'm someone who, I really believe in purpose in whiskey. You know, I've said it in notes where I'm like, I don't understand why they did this finish, or I don't understand why they did this. You know, it doesn't make sense. And I usually try to give the benefit of the doubt or something like that. But sometimes I'm just like, why did you do this? Like, why do you add the third finish on this thing? Why? Two is plenty, you know? And it, for people who follow the blog, you'll know exactly which note I'm looking at on that one. And maybe I'll tell you two later. But, you know, there's a point at which, you know, you've been doing all these steps. It makes sense to have that last step be a customized filtration. It's not taking flavor out. It's making it Michter's. And I think with that, we'll transition to our final pour of the evening. So this is the Michter's Toasted Barrel Strength Rye. This one is from 2020. And as I said, this is a high one. It's 114.8. I know I've had as low as 107-ish. And there we go. The green label, cream-ish rim and lettering.
Yeah. So this is a lot of fun. So if you have the opportunity to compare the barrel strength that we just enjoyed, and then so now we have taken this single barrel Kentucky straight rye, fully aged it, removed it from that toasted charred American white oak barrel, and then entered it into a new toasted uncharred American white oak barrel, and let it age for just a short amount of time. Sorry, we do not release how long, but it's long enough to, you know, impart a lot of special flavors, those flavor compounds from that toasted uncharred barrel. And it really makes for a very beautiful whiskey. You know, as you're tasting it, I get a lot of toffees, honey, black walnuts, you know, the list goes on. I love hearing people as they first try this, their different experiences. I know, Andrea, you talk a lot about like salted caramel is a big one that you speak of, but it's beautiful. It really demonstrates what we talk about from when we toast and char our new American white oak barrels just for our traditional aging. And then now it really showcases how impactful just a toasted uncharred barrel really is and how much flavor can really be imparted. And these projects are a lot of fun to be a part of as they're aging, you know, they're finishing in that barrel and just trying them every couple days and then every day. And you see those little changes in those nuances, and you know, whether it's on a trajectory of being sweet, because we've had, you know, our toasted barrel finish bourbon, we've done a toasted barrel finish original sour mash whiskey with different toast profiles to, you know, complement the whiskey that's actually in that expression. And so this one, you know, the toasted barrel is actually made from 24-month air-dried wood. So that's another, you know, traditionally, you know, we're 18-month all the way to 60. We've chose 24 months for this release. In 2020, the average proof was 109.2. So it just, again, it just shows you how much impact that toasted barrel has. And then if you get the opportunity to compare it next to just, you know, our US one barrel strength rye, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I know the first release of this one, of the toasted barrel strength rye that I had tried, I got a lot of kind of marshmallow on fire, just blown out. With, you know, version on the s'mores note, probably, you know, sense memory kind of just going down the chain, as it were. But nice dark chocolate notes. It became kind of a s'mores in the mouth, but with a lot more punch, let's say. And this one is I'm definitely getting more of the fruitiness, like a date cake or a sticky toffee pudding with a little
Pudding. We've had that come up before on experiences, you know, if people know what that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's if you don't know what it is, go try it and thank me later, because it's my second favorite dessert. So my favorite being creme brulee, which is perfect for someone who drinks whiskey. yeah, this one it's much more on the fruitier side. Whole cloves kind of being toasted in a pan.
Mm-hmm.
There's the cinnamon's there, a little less cinnamon for me than clove perhaps, but yeah, it's just lovely. I think this is probably, my favorite, Michter's release. It's certainly the one that I look for the most, of the, you know, regular releases, shall we say, the non 20-year-old releases, let's say, And it's really excellent. And to the point that Dan was making with the cocktails, actually, I think both of you might have made this at separate points, but this, I love drinking it neat, and I will probably choose to do so whenever given the chance, but in a cocktail, if you have a cocktail that's not usually a sweet, like I'll be honest, I didn't love it in an old fashioned because it became too sweet. I like the regular barrel strength rye for that one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it worked very well in a Manhattan with a dry vermouth.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that worked really well. Because again, it has that wonderful, it's not like putting white sugar in your mouth. It's a very deep, dark, you know, if it's going to be compared to sugar, it's kind of a muscovado, a dark turbinado, the toasted elements there. So it's not sickly by any means. Sickly sweet, I should say. And also just beautiful looking in the glass as the legs are falling, syrupy as you can get.
So. We talk about that in our whiskeys all the time, that nice syrupy quality. It's and it's a lot of fun to let our whiskeys as they sit and open up. And Andrea always mentions, read a book, you know, as you're reading the book, let the whiskey open up and just get that experience too. So there's no shortage of things to do. You can eat food, pair food, make desserts with it, read a book, you know. So
we're traveling this for listeners. This is being recorded just before Memorial Day weekend. I know I'm traveling for the weekend to visit my dad. They have a fire in the backyard. I am very seriously considering bringing this bottle down as the one to pair with that, because I haven't had the experience of tasting it next to a fire, and I really want to. so I think not too close, obviously, because, you know, hazards, but I think that'll be a really fun experience.
Yeah.
All right. I think we are coming up to the end of our episode here. Before we close out, is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to?
Well, I first of all would just like to say thank you. Thank you for having us. And I look forward to a time when things begin to open up and hopefully see people, at our Fort Nelson Distillery, our Visitors Experience Center in downtown Louisville. Louisville is a beautiful city. And you know, again, it's one of the best parts of the job besides the production aspect of it, but as meeting people and sharing with good laughs and stories and drinking great whiskey. So that I would just like to say thank you for having us.
Of course, I really appreciate it, taking tremendous time to do this. It's been wonderful throughout, and I think I'd like to, before we do the usual closeout of where we can find everybody, I've got a little left in my glass here. I like to do a two-way toast. So the first one, because I didn't get to meet the gentleman, I would like to do a toast to the memory of Willie Pratt and everything he did for both Michter's and the whiskey industry. Mm-hmm. And then second, to simply just do a toast to you two, to my guests, to spending so much time and to imparting so much knowledge to me, my listeners. I really look forward to re-listening, to editing, to sharing this episode. And I will be down at the Kentucky Bourbon Festival in September.
Great, great.
If you're there, I hope to see you. If not, I hope I can carve out a few minutes to get over to Louisville. But if not, to us all, cheers.
Yeah, cheers to you. And thanks to everyone who's listening to the podcast and watching. You know, you mean a whole lot to us. And it's very important to us, everything that we put a lot of love into everything that goes into these bottles. So we appreciate everyone and everyone taking the time to listen to us. So cheers.
Awesome. All right. So as always, we close out with where can people find you? So this one, we'll go gentleman first on this one.
Head to swallow.
Yeah. I figured, drinking. I thought Andrea is going to laugh because they know that I love social media so well. It's my Instagram's at Michter's Master Distiller. Did I say that correctly, Andrea?
Yes, at Michter's Master Distiller, at Michter's Master Maturation. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. So
wonderful. And I'll include those links in the show notes when this episode goes live. As always, you can find us at whiskeyinmyweddingring.com, the Whiskey Ring podcast, both on Instagram and Facebook and at our website. And I think we'll leave it at that. Dan, Andrea, it has been an absolute pleasure. Yeah. All right.
All right. Cheers.